Welcome to the 24/7 Sports College Football Podcast with your hosts, Chip Patterson and Barton Simmons. The ultimate insider's guide from signing day to the national championship game and everything in between. CBS Sports presents the 24/7 Sports College Football Podcast.
And now it's our pleasure to welcome back, as we do every Tuesday afternoon, a chance to sit down with SEC on CBS lead analyst Gary Danielson. This is a huge part of the schedule. It's one that we, as fans of the SEC, love every time of year. We go straight from Georgia, Florida in Jacksonville, right into the colossal matchup in the SEC West. Once again, Gary, we're going to get it in primetime, and we'll get to that game here in just a little bit. But I got to start at Florida, starting with Jim McElwain. You got a chance to spend some time with him leading into their game against the Bulldogs. Right. What's your general read on the situation there and whether Jim McElwain knew maybe this was happening going into the weekend?
Well, as you're going through it, you're never quite sure exactly. You try to take the temperature of not only the coaching staff, but we don't get to spend a lot of time with the players, obviously, when we do Georgia, Florida. But you could tell that Coach Mack was a bit distracted. But you don't know the depth of that. As the game unfolded and then the rumors came out later that he had informed the team that, you know, I know that you're hearing rumors about a buyout, but that's not really true. I just thought all of the outside noise and circumstances and press that coaches always tell their team they have to set aside and concentrate. I don't think Jim nor his staff did a very good job of it at all. His team was not prepared. And I thought their game plan was rudimentary. I was very disappointed after a bye week of the product that they put on the field. They seem to be hard-headed, much to the way Les Miles was a year ago when you could tell the administration and alumni were upset and Les was very hard-headed about making any changes at all, and it cost him his job. And it just appeared to me that, Coach Mack, just those outside pressures got to him. And, maybe it would a lot of people. But when you're leading 85 men and playing a good team against Georgia, it seemed to me that his team was distracted, and so was his coaching staff.
Did it surprise you at how quickly this relationship appears to have fizzled? We're coming off still a second SEC East title. Now, there have been plenty of reasons on the field to be frustrated, but also clearly some off-field relationship issues with the administration, certainly with the threats at the beginning of the week. But did you see this coming? Like, I don't think 3 weeks ago I could have imagined that we would be starting November and Florida would be the SEC East job that was already open.
No, it surely was a perfect storm, especially at the end, and it gained a lot of momentum with those two very close losses to LSU and Texas A&M. But the big picture of the frustration, I open up the broadcast pretending to be each team's fan base and how they were looking at this game. And the Florida fan base, my imitation was that they were looking at this game and going, "Well, what the heck? We just beat these guys. How can they be so good in 2 years, and we're still floundering with only 5 touchdown passes and are barely able to throw the ball for 120 yards a game?" And I think that, yes, the losses were maybe the nails that finished it off, and obviously the press conference. But this was a very, very frustrated Florida fan base who could not understand how a team in modern college football can't throw for 150 yards. And I think that really caught up to him.
Gary, where should Florida go next? And if you want to give names, feel free, but don't. Sure. That's not really what I'm asking. I'm curious what you think Scott Strickland should be looking for as he approaches this, because there have been some issues that they've had a hard time fixing now for about 7 years.
Right.
What's the next step for them?
Yeah, Bart, I'm not sure, but it's almost impossible to believe. And I've been doing these interviews throughout this year and many others about, you know, this talent-rich area of Florida, where Florida recruits from, are loaded with young players that are jumping up and making one-handed catches all over the country, but not at Florida.
Right. Yeah.
And I think the another huge straw was that decision that Mac made to move on, and he just could not handle move on from Will Grier. I mean, Will wanted to stay. He just wanted some assurances that when he gets eligible again, that he can fight for the number one spot. And McElwain made a decision that it would be best for all parties to move on. He had Felipe Franks coming in as a big recruit. I don't think he wanted to muddy the waters with that. And as Will Grier is leading the nation in touchdown passes, Florida's got five, and four of them were, you know, a Hail Mary. Two times Kentucky didn't even cover a receiver, and the other one was on a flea flicker or whatever the heck the other one was, or a jet sweep where he tossed it an inch and a half and got a forward pass out of it. So, you know, that all mounts. I mean, when you got Steve Spurrier sitting in the box next to the athletic director and you can't put together an offense, despite two trips to the SEC championship, I think Florida fan is very sophisticated. And I think they looked at that and said, those both have biz asterisks in front of it. And we better, and I think Scott Strickland, actually, I don't have to guess who he's going to bring in. He was very open about it at the press conference. He's going to bring an offensive guy. He's going to bring an offensive genius. I know, is that Rich Rod? Is that Scott Frost? Who is it? Is it Mike Gundy? I don't know, but he's not going to be bringing in a pedestrian, let's be balanced, let's play good defense, let's make sure that we can run the ball off tackle. That ain't happening this time. You know, or Dan Mullen. I mean, you know the same four or five names that everybody else knows. So right. I think Scott was very clear. He wants an offensive guy, and if we lose, and this is what was so frustrating about that game in Georgia to me, okay, is I think Florida fan would be willing to lose 35-31 rather than win 10-9. Now, you know, maybe not this week again, last week against Georgia. Okay, I think that, but for the most part, they weren't buying these 10-9 games anymore, 17-14 games. They wanted points, and I think Scott Strickland understands that.
What about the other side of the ball in that game? Georgia, you've had a chance to see a couple times now.
Right.
I mean, are they, look, 4 of 7 for 100 yards is all they had to do in the past game. Are they that much more talented? Have they just caught something? Where do you see this dominance emanate from? Is it just, have we looked up and didn't realize how talented they had gotten through the years, or what?
Boy, how do I summarize this? Georgia has always, Georgia has never lacked for talent. That was one of the frustrations for the Georgia faithful about Mark Richt.
Sure.
You know, he was winning his 9 games, his 8, 9, 10 games, but why he couldn't build it into a contender for the national championship is the reason he lost his job. Now, the transition for Kirby, his first year, with a true freshman quarterback, putting in a new system, and I thought they were a bit in a transition with very, very young talent, and a few classes that maybe Mark hadn't done quite as good a job at, and I thought they were in a transition year. But for the most part that I've been in this conference, Georgia, you know, closely resembles the talent of LSU, A&M, Auburn, and Florida when they're on top, and obviously just a step below Alabama. But, you know, pretty good. This year's team's a little differently built for a Georgia team because they're most powerful on defense. Their front seven is elite status. They feel very comfortable playing games that, you know, it could be 17-14. They'd be happy. Now, I haven't had a lot of those, but they really coach around their defense. And you can tell that by the strategy that Kirby employed at the end of the half. He had a 21-0 lead. Florida was backed up fourth and 15 on their own 20. They hadn't gained 20 yards in the game. Okay, fourth and 15. And he has three timeouts, I believe, maybe two. And there's a minute 50 on the clock, and he lets 40 seconds go off to protect his quarterback. I thought that said volumes about where he thinks his team is offensively and how much he still needs to protect Jake Fromm from potentially tossing away a sure win with a couple silly freshman mistakes. The question is, how many teams can take advantage of that? You know, they've gained great stature from that Notre Dame win. Who knows? Maybe Notre Dame played awful that game. Maybe Georgia is that much of an elite team. I know they're getting the credit for that. But it appears to me that because of their talent, Kirby can win 10 games rolling out the helmets. Now, it's the last two. It's Auburn this year. And it, you know, they don't play LSU, but it's Auburn and Alabama. Are they good enough to take on those two teams? And the questions are, I think, still huge. I mean, remember, Jalen Hurts, a true freshman quarterback at Alabama, eventually found his wall, and it was an extremely talented Clemson team. Will Georgia find their wall? You know, Auburn, I don't know. Well, I don't know, but it's at Auburn. We'll find out. But I still have to believe. I've never seen a team yet, even the great Alabama teams, that twice a year didn't fall behind and hand the ball to their quarterback and go, you know, you got to get us back in this game. We cannot protect you. Now, he did a pretty good job of that last drive against Notre Dame, although he just needed a field goal. Could he get behind 10 points against Auburn and Alabama? Then we'll see how this team takes that next step.
Is that the last big missing piece for you with Georgia? Because it sounds like there's some hesitation to push them into. Well, we're recording on Tuesday afternoon. The first playoff rankings are coming out in a few hours. There is talk that depending on how the committee looks at it, they could put Georgia above Alabama. Sounds like there's a little bit of distance from where Georgia can be than from what you've seen so far.
I think they deserve that. I think it would be a bad break for George to get the number one spot.
Ooh, for the mental side of things?
Well, then you'd have Alabama. I mean, if you think the Vanderbilt disrespect was big, now I think Nick Saban would fly into that committee and kiss them all if he put George in number one.
Well, as we start to consider that great Alabama team, they're going into LSU week facing an LSU team that, you know, they should know really well. You know, that should have their attention. But we talked about the Las Vegas point spread before in terms of just, you know, the perception of it. You know, more than three touchdowns here in this game. Do you think that this matchup is going to end up playing closer to last year's matchup than what the Vegas experts have set for the point spread?
I'd be surprised. I mean, last year, I believe, wasn't it 0-0 after three quarters?
It was.
Being a 10-0 game. And,
yep.
You know, as you look at this more firepower and different type offense that Alabama has, I'd be surprised if LSU, if they have any thought of winning this game, being able to win it by scoring less than 21 points. You know, and that's a challenge right there. You have to believe that Alabama's going to score a couple touchdowns and kick a couple field goals.
Mm-hmm.
Minimum on an off day, okay? So I'm thinking if you're LSU, you have to go into this game. I would think if I'm Matt Canada, I'm looking at we got to score a touchdown every quarter here somehow. And that's going to be a big challenge. This LSU team is really interesting. It's not the same style of a team that Alabama faced a year ago, especially on offense. They're a completely different attacking team. They're not challenging your manhood running the ball downhill isolation 1975 run plays this year.
Right.
They have a whole different finesse. They'd love to run it between the tackles, but they do it in a lot of different ways. And you have to be on your game. You have to have all your assignments. It's very similar to defending a triple option team that runs the ball all the time. You have to be really aware of what's going on because they can outflank you instantly. And then they can also put your two outside men, whether they be defensive ends or outside linebackers, in a quandary of who to take really quick. And you have a lot of people, you know, they're one of the few teams that run the ball at the point of attack and do not block the guy standing right where they want to run it. They try to finesse him. And that's very reminiscent of option football and why they can outnumber you very easily. So LSU has a lot of talented football players. If you go 1 through 22, I mean, there's about 15 LSU players that can stand toe-to-toe with Alabama and never back down. Problem is player number 23 to 85. That's where this LSU team is not as good as it's been in the past. They used to be able to roll their backups in and not miss a beat physically. Whether it was the offensive line, defensive line, linebacker, strong safety, wide receiver, running backs, they were loaded in all those different areas. Now, hey, you know, no one can, you know, as deep as that Alabama, you know, running back situation is, you can't say that Darius Geis couldn't play for Alabama.
Sure.
Okay. I mean, of course he can play. I mean, you look at the Alabama receivers, but DJ Shark, I mean, he's a talented player. You look at the offensive line for LSU. I don't know if KJ Malone is going to play, but Malone and Clapp and Weathersby, even Ed Ingram, their true freshman right guard, they're all capable, good, solid, stout running offensive linemen. But when you know, one more nick on that offensive line, and now you're down to guys who can't quite handle it. Same with the defensive line, you know. I'll match up Rashard Lawrence with anybody that Alabama has. He'd play. So would Arden Keaton play. So would Corey Thompson play. So would Devin White play. But boy, once it gets up to 65 plays and the next set of guys come in, the next set of guys for Alabama are way better.
Gary, who's the second best team in the SEC East? Like, we're going to see Georgia play South Carolina this weekend. And, you know, the line there is 24 points. Right. You know, Missouri is favored this weekend against Florida. You know, they're sneaking around trying to get to a bowl. There's a lot of bad behind Georgia. Is there anybody in that side of the division that you can point to and say that's a pretty good football team?
No.
Oh, man, that's fast. That was a really fast and confident answer.
No. You know, Florida had a chance, but they've regressed so much on offense. It was almost as if the Florida staff refused to put Malik Zaire in the game because they didn't want him to do well. And then we would question why he was in the game before.
They've
also lost Davis, their running back now. You know, they're hurting at wide receiver without Callaway. They seem to be a hot mess to me. After that, I mean, you love some of the things that Bentley does at quarterback, but they've gone through a bout of injuries, and they don't look like defensively they can stand up to what, you know, Georgia can hit them in the mouth. So Tennessee, it looks like Jared Garantano is going to have a bright future. I was really impressed with the way he played against Alabama. The stage didn't look too big for him, but you know, so many things are going outside of the program. That looks like a coaching change at the end of the year, and that they all are talking to people off stage anyway, so I don't think they just feel the need to make a move right now. But that thing is not pretty when they play a team of comparable talent. That's, you know, the teams they beat are Indiana State. You know, I mean, God, it's almost embarrassing to watch them play. So no, I can't. You know, Mississippi State would probably pretty much rodeo anybody in the East besides Georgia. You know, Texas A&M is so up and down this year with their team. Who knows who's going to show up? So Ole Miss is a mess. I told you guys at the beginning of the year, I've been doing it 12 years. This is about as bad as I've seen the SEC. You got two teams, two and a half teams. LSU's right on the verge. They need another recruiting class. And I think they'll get there. But, you know, the key to this football game, and I've watched, did a lot of reading and did a lot of watching tape already. you know, can this LSU team protect Danny Etling at all? I if they can't protect the quarterback, we watched Danny play against against Alabama last year. He started getting hit in this game, and he couldn't throw the ball in the ocean after a while. There were guys open, and he couldn't hit them. And they have to figure out a way to keep that shark attack from going. When Alabama starts to get you reeling and start hitting your quarterback, there's not a lot of Deshaun Watsons out of there that can weather that storm like Deshaun did a year ago and right the ship. And Danny has not, he does not look to be a guy that can do that. They need to keep the hits off their quarterback big time.
We've seen a couple of offenses through the years that have given Alabama some trouble from time to time. No one really consistently. I think pretty, you never see someone that can just run right out of Alabama is going to be successful. But LSU's correct. Got this sort of like, you know, Matt Canada can change up paces, you know, yes. Jet sweep, get people running east to west. I mean, does he bring something to the table here from a play caller's perspective and a scheme perspective that can give them an advantage? Or do you think Alabama is built to defend this kind of offense as well as any?
Well, I don't think there's any magic formula for defending this off. It's like going up against Georgia Tech. And I even remember Alabama going up against Georgia Southern in the triple option, and they would gain 300 yards rushing, okay? This offense is built to put you in a two-way position, and you'll have to make some decisions because they're selling out at the point of attack with finesse instead of power. So you got a lot of people, you know, they're running the ball right off tackle left, and they're not blocking the defensive end, standing right there. And they're doing it by quickly finessing them. It's almost, it's hard to explain, but it's almost an inside out, it's almost an outside in triple option. Whereas when you defend Georgia Tech and Navy, you have to defend the fullback out, fullback quarterback pitch. In this offense, you have to defend the jet sweep in. You have to defend, if you don't defend that pitch guy, the jet sweep guy first, the ball will be in his hands and he'll be around you before you can even move. So you have to defend, take away him first and then move inside. And that's no easy thing to do because they keep shifting their tackles and their ends and their motions back and forth and change your strength of formation. But I'm anxious to see with one of the brilliant defensive coaches in all of football, not just college football, that Nick Saban can't come up with a game plan for it.
Mm. Do you think that Auburn presents, you mentioned how many teams, looking at the SEC West, Mississippi State, LSU maybe needing another crop or another cycle of recruits. Yep. Where does the Gus Malzahn Auburn program fit in this? Because the road, you know, for both Georgia and Alabama, right, both go through Jordan-Hare Stadium. What's the, you know, this feels like a big week for us to sort of get a feel for where Auburn's at going into that Georgia game.
Well, they need to continue to be healthy. They need both running backs. And if, if Petway can't play, and am I right? I've heard he's questionable for this game.
Correct.
That's a big problem for Auburn. That's a big problem. When they have their guys though, I feel like they're a legitimate threat because they're extremely gifted on the defensive line and they've got a lot of experience on the offensive line. And, you know, I mean, they tossed away the one game they had won.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they just tossed it away, you know, inexplicably against LSU. I thought watching them on tape that they'd be able to give anybody a good game. I really did. I mean, they gave Clemson one. I thought that they would handle LSU and or at least make it a game. You know, I knew LSU would show up, but I thought Auburn was more talented than them. But they got to stay healthy. They, you know, without being healthy for Georgia and Alabama, I just don't see how they can match up. Healthy, they got a chance. They got a quarterback that can throw the deep ball, and they got a defense that can keep them in the game.
As you look at the national scene, again, we mentioned we're recording this just a little bit before the first playoff selection committee rankings. What do you think you learned, or what do you think we as college football fans learned about Ohio State watching that win against Penn State?
Yeah. Well, they're one of the five or six or seven teams in the country that can put athletes on the field to beat the other five or six teams. Okay? Mm-hmm. I mean, they belong up there. I mean, they're, you know, Clemson talented, Alabama talented. You know, I thought USC was there. The more you watch them play, I'm not sure. Oklahoma talented. I mean, what they've done to Penn State in 2 years. I mean, 2 years ago when they lost, they gained 413 yards. And I think Penn State, I don't have it with me, I think they were 275 yards. This year, they put another 529 yards versus 283. So they have 950 yards in two games against Penn State, and their quarterback has gone 61 for 82 in two games against Penn State. But what I really appreciated, and it's something that Alabama has brought to the table in many, many games. We've seen them against LSU when they've stole those games in Death Valley. Clutch play. When the game was on the line, when the Buckeye fan was restless, you could hear the noise in the stadium. They were wanting to know what the heck's going on. With the whole season riding, they made all of the clutch plays going down the stretch. And that's something that's really, you know, that heart of a champion that Urban seems to be able to translate into his teams and all the great coaches. Nick is able to do it. We'll see if Kirby can as he goes forward. I think that's another one thing that has come through is this Ohio State football team wants to, they has an extreme desire to win these games. They feel their righteous place is there. I thought they were a year early last year and didn't belong in it. I was outspoken about that. But I think this team, you know, they're extremely, I mean, come on, you know, I mean, what did Barkley run for? 44 yards? He had 36 in one carry.
Right.
That means he had 8 yards and 20 other carries in this game. Okay. Yeah. You cannot do that without A-level talent and a desire and a well-coached team. But, you know, the committee's in a strange spot this year. Very, very strange spot. It's I don't feel sorry for them because they created it from last year themselves. And as they walk into this, and again, we're taping this before, as they walk into this first one, and if they deem, and it's going to be very interesting how they place it, but if they deem Notre Dame as the best one-loss team, they're in a heap of trouble, this committee. I don't know what they're going to do. Because if they put Notre Dame as the best one-loss team, what do they do with Georgia? Okay, because Notre Dame can't pass Georgia.
But could Georgia get more? Could Georgia
would have to lose two games.
Yeah.
Georgia would have to lose two games. So here's the problem. If Georgia beats Auburn and runs the table and gets to Alabama and plays a normal game, they lose, let's say. Okay, I mean, Alabama, Georgia, well, I think everybody would agree with are probably two of the four best teams.
Right.
Ohio State's going to be in. Okay, or the Big Ten champ, Wisconsin, is going to be in. That means you want one spot. And this initial ranking of Notre Dame, if they put them as the best one-loss team, what do you do with Clemson? What do you do with Oklahoma? What do you do with Washington? Are you really going to have three power conferences not represented, including the defending champions? Mm. And that's the position that this committee has put themselves in because of the ill-advised granting of Ohio State over a champion Penn State last year. It was a huge mistake.
Where do you see, to me, and that is that's an interesting thought and how that Notre Dame thing is going to play out. To me, I still have them in there right now. With that four team, to me, Oklahoma's got to be in there because they beat Ohio State. Like, where do you stand on like Ohio
really?
State now
really?
Looking as good as they do, but having really? That home lost Oklahoma? Like,
right. I just dare you to have that committee not have the Big Ten champion in the game.
Isn't Barry not Alvarez right. still around? You, There's no you, way he won't
you,
let that
you,
happen.
Have you been watching the ratings for these games?
Yeah.
There's no way the Big Ten champion with one loss is not in the game. That's the problem. That's the whole problem with this where Notre Dame is initially ranked because they're still going to get to play Miami, and I believe they're going to go 5-0 against the ACC.
Mm. Goodness gracious. Well, a lot to digest. Again, we will have those selection committee rankings that are coming out Tuesday night. They will be in play, and we will know where Alabama sits in this first rankings, as well as Georgia and everyone else involved. Alabama and LSU, it is an 8 p.m. Eastern time kickoff under the lights. Be sure you tune in to hear Gary, Brad Nessler, out of the Force, all on the call. Gary, thank you so much. Great to get back with you. We'll be looking forward and watching on Saturday night.
Thanks, guys.